As Morrissey once said, there is a light and it goes out in Hertfordshire on a Friday evening. A very happy new year, everybody, and welcome to Under the Abbey Stand. This is the preview show with a bit of a twist. Should have included a double review, but the UK Power Board put pay to one of those, allegedly. And in the other, the lights were firmly off for the ease anyway. A man who knows all about power is joining me. Happy New Year, Tom.
Yeah, it's good to be back. Quite Morrissey in the intro.
I know. I didn't know whether to put Morrissey or the Smiths there.
Since you said that, I've just Googled Morrissey opinions on Google. And there's several articles along the lines of 35 of Morrissey's most controversial quotes. Well, so we've already got some problematic takes in there already.
I'm going to take his lyrics around the sort of mid-80s as a different Morrissey to everything that's happened since. But it is an interesting way to start the year, isn't it? Another year of UTAS. Look, does it say a lot about the last two games, Tom, that the highlight is quite clearly me and you singing Islands in the Stream in a pub in Stevenage around what should have been half-time in the game?
Yeah, I mean, what more can I add to that, really?
I say singing.
I think the funniest thing was returning to that pub. Like you say, it would have been half-time. Seeing sort of, you know, it was sparsely populated at best, I would argue, and realizing that karaoke night would have happened anyway.
Yeah, exactly.
Quite interesting. Which I can only assume is one of the most depressing experiences of all time if you haven't already been there since about 2 o'clock in the afternoon anticipating something like a local derby, which obviously didn't happen, but there we are. There we have it.
I think we shone a light on the place with our sort of something near singing. Brilliant bit of karaoke there. I would say that I'd like drop it into the show, but I don't want to sort of ruin people's experiences of listening to this podcast that much. So I think the less said about it, the better from here on out. In general, Tom, we went on the last pod, obviously festive period, hard to get pods out and keep them relevant. So we only had the one pod after the Oxford game, looking at Exeter and Oxford, which the other boys were on. Just thought I'd sort of start by getting your general thoughts on the festive period for the years from Exeter through to Orient. We'll go into a bit of detail Stevenage and Orient, but not so much with Stevenage, but Orient, I guess. But in general, just how are you taking that? What's that, 3 points from nine, I guess?
Yeah, it's been okay. I think that what happened is Orient has left a really bitter taste for a lot of people, and that's understandable because it was, you know, we'll come on to it. It was not great, but I think that aside, like, you know, we left the Stevenage ground feeling quite positive, I think, overall, strangely enough, thinking that, you know what, if you get away from this and you've beaten Exeter and you put in a really good show in Oxford, which, you know, frankly, we should have got something out of, and obviously don't lose to Stevenage, that's probably quite kind, I think. You know, but in all seriousness, you know, you're probably quite happy. I think particularly with the game sort of either side of Christmas, the Exeter game was really good. And, you know, we've banged on endlessly about XG statistics and stuff like that. But those two games particularly, we created chances left, right and centre. And the Exeter game should have been comfortable at half time. There was obviously a bit of a strange period in the second half where we sort of had to make do. You know, Adme obviously came off and that meant we had to sit a little deeper, but we get the win and it was a comfortable win in the end. And, you know, against Oxford, I think if it wasn't for the fact that there was no recognised strike on the pitch, you know, if you put in Anna Adme, for example, you're probably 2 or 3 up at half time. Mm. And that's not exaggerating. And you would have to assume, based on what Oxford were able to create against us, that a 2 or 3 nil lead at least gets you something from the game. Obviously, we were so close to doing it and it's disappointing to lose in that fashion, but, you know, there's ways to lose games, and that's probably going to be, I guess, the take of the next sort of 40 minutes or so, I guess, because the way that we lost the next game that we actually played was obviously absolutely not that. But yeah, I think up until Orient it was pretty positive, to be honest, I think overall, and after that not so much. But that's probably what you get for having a game on New Year's Day after probably, yeah, for quite a lot of people, quite an evening before, and just regretting quite a lot of stuff the day after.
Yeah,
including the game.
It seemed like a few of the players had a bit of a big night as well, to be honest. But we'll come on to Orient in a second. I think that's a pretty good summary of that festive period, and I think especially the Oxford game is worth mentioning. I just wanted to make that point as well, that having gone to the game, it was, I think Casper summarised it quite well on the pod, the last pod, that it was, the first half especially, was like as good as I've seen a United team play in so long. And it shouldn't be forgotten that despite getting, you know, no points from our last two games, there is within that lots and lots of positives where, you know, the same situation occurred that we didn't have a striker in either game. And I think we played the game so well in the first half against Oxford. You can only criticise them for not scoring, and we won't go into it too much, but maybe that's become a bit of a trend. I don't know if that's something that, I mean, you know, we'll talk about January as well at some point, but I remember, you know, after Harris's first game against Charlton, he said, I think almost in every game, his post-match press conferences, he said, we should have been 4-5-6 up at half-time.
Which is ridiculous. Come on, let's, that's an exaggeration, if ever there was one.
That's a lot, yeah. But it does feel like, I mean, he does have a point that I think we've put in some really good performances, which is why I think that Orient one stands out so much. Let's just quickly go over Stevenage, just because, obviously, little references at the start there, but be mad to not talk about it for a second. I mean, have you ever experienced anything like that at a football ground?
No, in a word. I mean, yeah.
you hear about floodlight failures, but normally mid-game, right? That's like the more common place to have a floodlight failure. I don't know, I've actually never experienced one. That's the first time I've ever experienced it, but I've never seen one pre-game.
No, I've literally never seen anything like it in the ground. I mean, thankfully, it's worth noting that we were actually in the ground.
Yeah,
we got in there ridiculously early, frankly, and obviously turned out to be a good decision. I wouldn't have liked to have been outside, where it seems that it wasn't maybe well managed as it could be, or could have been. I mean, we walked out and I thought, oh my God, like something absolutely insane's gone on here, because there was about, you know, it seemed like they deployed the entirety of the police force at the home, the three counties and everywhere else in the country, frankly. It was absolutely mental. But yeah, I mean, look, I don't mind admitting, and I don't know if there's other people that feel the same way. The longer it went on, I was kind of hoping it wouldn't start.
Yeah.
Because when you've been in that ground for like, you know, half an hour and not seen any football, albeit a little bit of a warm-up, you start thinking, taking something that's absolutely mental out of this might actually be quite a good evening. And having this sort of delay, it just made me think, like, I wonder which team is going to do better with this. It's probably not going to be us. But yeah, it was mental, man. And obviously, it's happened before at Stevenage. You know, I'm not an electrician, so I'm not about to start picking into the bones of why it happened, or you know, what can be done to prevent it. But it seems like it's on Stevenage, and you know, there is an ever increasing part of me, admittedly quite a small part of me, which thinks, is that them for failing to fulfill a fixture, and therefore should we be awarded 3 points? But admittedly, I'm thinking that through very much amber tinted spectacles. But yeah,
we went from, you know, we'd have played a Stevenage side, what, fifth in the league, riding high with Saka Janna up top. I'd be shocked if whenever the rearranged fixture is played, we're in as bad a shape injury wise as we were.
Oh, mate, imagine if Saka Janna plays in the rearranged one. Imagine when we'll be in the league, we'll be firmly rooted to the bottom. I think it's worth noting as well, you know. And this probably doesn't go for everybody, because I know it's a game that a lot of people look forward to, and you know, it's one that people maybe wouldn't have had the day or following evening out that we had afterwards. But it actually ended up being quite an enjoyable way to be honest.
It was one of the best ways I've ever done.
And I know that's probably going against the grain somewhat of the 1,500 fans that would have been there. But at least for sort of five or six of us, I think we had quite a good time, to be honest.
Yeah,
so
yeah.
Yeah, there is that.
Well, you were supposed to end up back in Ely, and you did wake up in my flat in London the next day. So that seems like says a little bit about what sort of night we ended up having.
Yeah, that was as surprising to me as it was to you, to be honest, when I woke up.
I've got a question here. It just says, is that the best result we could have got from the game? Feels like we've covered that, but it is remarkable, isn't it? I mean, like one of the fixtures that really didn't want to be playing with a team like that, and that happens. It felt like there was someone looking down on us that night, didn't it?
Yeah, I mean, it's worth noting that floodlight failures are indeed a platform to build on. So that's,
as you've always said.
Always said that.
Should we talk about a game that actually happened then, Orient on New Year's Day? I counted myself out of this when I watched this with the Frankfurt U's on my sofa, because I quite simply couldn't be bothered to get out of bed.
And what a decision that was, by the way.
What a decision.
I was at the game with Matt Caspel and sort of one or two others, and they will very much attest that I was also not there, despite being present.
Spiritually.
You know what? I think before getting into the bones of the game, which is probably the most depressing part, I mean, New Year's Day football, what a terrible idea that is.
Awful.
Terrible.
Let's talk about some New Year's Day games just off the top of our heads. I mean, there's one that sticks in my head, which even worse than that
MK.
Is the obvious one.
Yeah,
it's the MK one. Yeah,
three. I was also thinking of like Braintree as well. We went
to
Braintree place out 1 year.
Did we lose their 3-2 1 year on a New Year's Day?
That was the one. We were 3-0 down after about an hour, I think.
That's right.
Well done. Stoppage time,
and it was piercing it down like proper mud bath.
Yeah. But I mean, look, nobody needs that when frankly we're all too hungover and.
Did we not have Wednesday away last year on New Year's Day?
I think it was the second.
Right, just as
it
bad.
Was moved, I think.
It's just as bad.
Or yeah. Anyway, so you pick yourself up after the evening before, and you get into the ground, and you think, right, this will lift me up. This will make me feel better. And you know what? I mean, the second half was something a bit different, but the first half was an absolutely dire affair. Football was
so bad.
45 minutes are probably the worst football I've seen since we got to this level. You know, we've talked about poor Cambridge United performances, but that's normally been kind of counteracted by the fact that the other teams absolutely slaughtered us and therefore showed some quality in the process. I mean, there was obviously that one pot shot, I think it was from Theo Archibald, that hit the bar.
Oh, yeah.
But that aside, like, nothing happened.
And they hit the post as well, didn't they? But it sort of was like, it was weirdly like a nothing chance that somehow hit the post.
It was a really poor game. Yeah. Well, a really poor first
half. I actually fell asleep on 40 minutes. I woke up like during half time. So that gives you a bit of an indication about not just how I was feeling, but the state of the game. Look, in general, Tom, obviously, hugely disappointing. 2-0 loss to Orient. Weirdly, I don't know, for me, it's actually less the result, which obviously is important. But it was the manner of that performance in the second half, especially in that first 15, 20 minutes. Talk me through your thoughts on it.
Yeah, I think what was most disappointing, and I think the reaction to this loss has been almost like all the good stuff that happened in the last four games before that, since Harris has come in, and I guess even counting the Fleetwood game just after Bonner left, like that's all kind of done now, that's all kind of gone, and there seems to have been a really big reaction to this, bigger than maybe I was expecting to a loss. I mean, it was a really poor performance, don't get me wrong. It was really bad, but I think the thing that kind of just made it ever so slightly more disappointing was the contrast of, like, you know, the excuse fundamentally is that we don't have any forward players, and that means that the team can't be set up in the way you'd like it to be. But when you think how we played at Oxford in, you know, under exactly the same constraints as that, the contrast of the way that we attacked, the way we pressed, the way that we got at our opposition, who are a better team than Leyton Orient, let's not forget. And then the way we actually played against Leyton Orient was so different. And, fundamentally nowhere near good enough. I mean, we created the sum total of absolutely nothing throughout the entire game. And, you know, there's reasons for that. There's, you know, the quality of certain players on the pitch obviously gets brought into question, but I think fundamentally the way that we actually played the game was just not right. And it's really disappointing because, you know, Orient is not, you know, obviously the derby, it's not the biggest game we'll have all season, but it feels like it's a game that we should be up for in a sense. And, you know, we've played them twice this season. I think they're probably our two worst performances. And, you know, we've handed them 6 points, a team that are not better than us. I will maintain that. I don't believe they're better quality players across the entire pitch. I think they've got one or two really good individuals, but, you know, just like ourselves. But they're not a team that we should be losing to so easily. And we did. And for me, we beat ourselves in both games, but certainly on New Year's Day. And it's a really flat performance, and, you know, I don't know, there's a lot to unpick from it, I guess, in a sense of, you know, is it the manager, is it is it the way he set the team up to play, is it the way the players execute game plans, is it the way that certain players just frankly aren't up to the level, or is it the fact that, you know, the summer has come back to bite us twice probably over this Christmas period and New Year period. You know, Oxford, we can't quite hold out, players knackered, and you feel like if there was a presence up front, by giving us the outball, and against Leyton Orient, we just weren't able to impact the game in any meaningful way. And, you know, when you can't impact the game at one end, you've got to be pretty damn good at the other end to make sure that you take something from it, and we weren't. So that's why we've lost the game fundamentally.
We're going to talk about January later, just quickly, and it's obviously something that we're going to talk about on a lot of pods over the next couple of weeks. So
four weeks, I reckon.
So again?
Next 4 weeks,
yeah.
Yeah.
But what I was going to ask was, do you think the one difference between the Oxford and the Orient performance, you're spot on in that in both games we lacked a striker, and you go from an Oxford performance where it was maybe more our legs and options off the bench than anything that killed us, and an Orient performance where we never really got going and never created anything. There's one difference, though, which is Sully Kaikai against Saiku Janna basically playing up top and leading the line, so to speak. And I don't want to sit here and just... I'm not just raising this question to just to dig out Saiku Janna. But do you think there's something in the fact that... I've listened to a lot of Not the Top 20 pod recently, which obviously I highly recommend. I'm sure a lot of our listeners listen to as well. And George and Ali often say that, like, Neil Harris teams that they watch in the past, they always have a striker, quite a talismanic striker. And Ahadmé was filling that role and obviously doing it brilliantly in Harris's reign. And his team's always built around one presence up front. Maybe Kaikai filled those boots better than Janna, and it's as simple as that, that he was still providing some sort of an outball against Oxford where Janna wasn't against Oxford. Or actually, do you think it's more a question of service? Because the other frustrating thing is, obviously, we joke around the Stevenage game, but we should have been 10 times fresher than Orient. We had a whole other game off, right? So, I don't know, what do you put it down to? I know it's a hard question to ask, but is it for you as simple as the quality of Saiku Janna? Is it the quality of the delivery to him, or something else?
Well, I mean, the obvious and the kind of sit on the fence answer is that it's a bit of everything, but...
Yeah, don't say that, though. Can you just
pick me up? Yeah, I mean... You know, you obviously had quite a balanced take there, and I think tried quite hard not to just lay into Janna.
Yes.
I don't have that willpower, unfortunately. It's part of the New Year's resolutions that I've made. Let's not beat around the bush. He's nowhere near good enough to be playing at this level. We can slag him off till the cows come home and say, you know, he's shit, he's this, he's that. This part of his game's not good enough. This part of his game's not good enough. But... at some point, you know, you kind of take it away from just criticising the player and just being like, why is he in this situation? Like, why is a player that clearly is not good enough for this level? And, like, I remember having a conversation around this time last year as well, and people were like, oh, I should be given a chance. And I was like, why? Like, why? Like, I mean, you know, the argument's always made. Like, people even say about Houndstrup now. It's like, how can you say it's a bad sign and we've not seen him play? Like, because I have common sense and I can see what's going on in front of me. Like, you don't have to watch a player play like a run of like 10, 15, 20 games to assess whether or not they're the right quality. Sometimes, right, at this level, you've seen enough football to know when a player's got it and when they haven't. And Janna just never has. And that's been obvious since pretty much day one. And, you know, I know there's a lot of affection towards him. He seems like quite a pleasant, sort of hardworking guy who really wants it to work. But the simple fact that he went out online to Wimbledon, the league below last season, who didn't have a good season in their league, and again, impacted it virtually not at all. And there's no reason that he would come back in and across the course of an entire season or when he can play, do any better than that, because he's just not got it. He's just not got the quality that's required. So that's number one, and that obviously means it's difficult to really kind of impact the front end of the pitch. I will say, like, there's been a lot of talk about how the ball was sort of just pumped up to him, and you know, again, like, as much as we can just criticise Janna and his individual qualities, it's probably like there are probably better forwards than him that would also have struggled, I think, in that team playing in that way.
Yeah.
But, like, I think the point is, like, you know, if you're not a target man, if you're not an Ahadmé sort of player, your game has to be different, and you have to create opportunities by making clever runs, by making a bit of space or sort of finding space. And, you know, the intelligence just isn't there. And it's probably best summed up by the fact that when Brandon Njoku comes on in the, 80th minute or something, he literally did more and caused more problems for the Orient defence in about 45 seconds of being on the pitch than Janna did in the rest of the game. Mm. And, you know, you know, that's kind of where it's at the moment, and I don't think it's a stretch to say that we're going to struggle to win any games until we simply have actual forwards on the pitch. You know, the Blackburn one that we're going to preview is obviously a different thing because of the level they play at, and it's a cup game. But you would like to think that by that Fleetwood game, we're in a position where Janna just simply doesn't have to feature at all, and you can have a bit more of a focal point. But at the same time, I will make the caveat, despite everything I've just said, it is probably not right just to put the entire thing down to having Saiku Janna on the pitch, because clearly it's a wider thing than that, and other people have to do more as well. But yeah, I mean, it's not a great start, is it?
No, it was a bad day at the office all around, and very, very, very frustrating. Let's just quickly, this is something that I think has to be talked about. Again, we're digging into individuals a little bit, but I do think this is quite a major talking point from the Orient game, which is the other end of the pitch. And Jubal Okadina rightfully kept his place in the team under Harris when he took over, and has put in some, in my opinion, some brilliant performances. And I don't know about you, but I've always had that worry that that shock is always around the corner with him. You always get that tiny little bit of hesitation, that little, there was that bounce against Blackpool in the last few minutes. Do you remember that one he lets bounce on the edge of the box? It's a little thing like that. You just see, gets away with that one. I don't have another one off the top of my head, but you know, he played really well against Oxford, and you think there was always that little scare that he's got that in him, because you've seen him do it a few times. And obviously, he's a young defender, he's going to make a few mistakes, and that's fine. But huge question marks on his performance again here, Tom. And I suppose on a wider scale, it's like, how long can he keep making like howlers? Let's go as far as howlers, and still like get back into the side, because at some point you do have to cut it out of your game, right, as a young centre half.
Yeah, well, I mean, he didn't even get the rest of the game, did he?
No, he got hurt.
So there's your answer. Yeah, I mean, look, the two goals, a huge amount of blame for both of them is on Okadina. There's no getting away from that. He's hooked. He comes off. He didn't play well enough for the first half. Again, like a few moments are quite shaky there, and frankly, you know, when you make the errors that he did and was making as well after the second goal. At some point, it becomes almost like a case of almost just protecting him, like just get him out of the firing line, just get him off the pitch, because he's not doing anyone any good to see that. And, you know, you'd almost prefer a player like Ryan Bennett, who doesn't necessarily have a long-term future at this football club, to just take a bit of that slack, I think. Obviously, he came on and did better. So that's, you know, I guess evidence that maybe it's the right decision. Yeah, I don't know. I maybe take issue a little bit with the fact that, you know, Okadine is a player who, you know, you're right to say that he's had these games where, and it has become something of a feature, I guess, of his game as a player at this level, where he can put in these performances, and often it can be quite catastrophic. But it just feels that every time he puts in a bad performance, like the knives are out, and you know, he has to be dropped and shouldn't be in the team again for, you know, the foreseeable. But as other players in that same defence, I'll say Liam Bennett, for example, you know, without just wanting to kind of dig him out for no reason, who has put in at times this season a string of really poor performances, and yet everyone's giving him man of the match all the time. So it seems like a really strange sort of thing. Mm. And I know that's just kind of nuances within a fan base, but you know, I mean, you know, Jibril is still a young defender who's developing and learning the game at this level. And I think we've seen enough to know there's a player that's in there that is capable of playing at this level. I don't expect he'll play in the immediate future. I think, you know, we'll come on to talk about it again, but I guess probably Ryan Bennett probably comes in for the Blackburn game. It's probably quite an easy decision to make, I guess. But yeah, look, there's no getting away from it. It was a poor performance, and you know, his mistakes cost us two goals. That's not to say they wouldn't have come from elsewhere if they hadn't happened. But you know, if you look at it on the balance of play, it was relatively comfortable in the first half, even if we're not kind of threatening too much going forward. Second half, two mistakes from Okadina, two goals, and we lose the game. So that probably tells its own story, I guess.
Yeah, it's going to be interesting to see, I think, how ruthless Harris is with some of these players after that, you know, being that first really poor
performance. Well, I was going to say this, like, you know, it comes onto his interview afterwards a little
exactly,
bit.
Exactly, yeah.
And...
Well, have you got... I mean, the Gordon quote especially is probably the one to pick out here, right?
Yeah, I mean, you know, he's obviously absolutely torn into Gordon and questioned... Look, we're not going to speculate about exactly what it is, but fundamentally questioned his attitude and his standards. Yeah. And, you know, off the football pitch, basically. Things like timekeeping, I think, were mentioned, which is... such a basic requisite of just any job to be a grown-up, basically. but like, you know, and to be honest, that, you know, I think if you read between the lines a little bit, it's a really easy player for Harris to just lay into, whether it's right or wrong. You know, I'm not sitting here saying whether it's the right thing to do or the wrong thing to do, but look, Gordon's going to be going back to Palace during this month. I think we can all make that assumption. And it sends a message to the rest of the squad without having too much of a long-term impact. So to just sit there and go, his standards are not good enough, he doesn't deserve to play, and if your standards aren't the right level, you won't play to a player who's just going to go back anyway, is probably not a bad thing to do for the longer run, because it maybe sends a bit of a message to the others. But yeah, look, I think the message from Harris for the last sort of few days, including his presser before the Blackburn game and everything that's come out of that, is just fundamentally, we need some good players in the forward part of the pitch, and we will do that. So, yeah, maybe it's one not to worry too much about, hopefully.
Do you think in general, I just wanted to ask on his post-match comments, in general, not just the Gordon quote, but it struck me as a very different approach that Bonner would have taken to a performance and result like that. In fact, I mean, you can go back and look at some of Bonner's post matches, and I don't want to rewrite history here because we've said a million times how good an orator Bonner was at his best. But clearly, you know, towards the end at least, that defensiveness wasn't playing with fans at all. Do you think is it interesting to you how there's clearly a bit of a difference in how Harris approached that? Just even the language he used, how he said, there's a quote which I don't have in front of me where he says, like, I've just been in there and like basically torn them a new one, and I've told them exactly what I think about that, rather than maybe saying, you know, we're still overachieving in the league, or I don't know, like putting a bit of a different sort of shine on it.
Yeah, well, I mean, again, I'm not saying it's the right thing to do for managers always just to tear into their players, because it's not.
No.
I mean, how many times did we talk, even while Bonner was still manager, about the standards of some of these players?
Yeah.
Like, you know, we talked about, was it after, I can't remember, was it what was the game we conceded quite a late goal at home?
Shrewsbury.
We talked about that with, like, your professional footballer, just like pull your fingers out. And, like, I'm not being funny, but, you know, the one thing that, you know, is obviously the clear difference between Bonner and Harris, just away from the management, is that Harris had quite a successful playing career. Mm. You know, relatively speaking, you know, for the level we played at, he's the top goal scorer of a very, very well established Football League club. And obviously, he's achieved some good things as a manager already. Like, he's not built a career on, like, watching players just slack and just not do well enough and just put in a performance. And if he believes that the application or the commitment is in question, then he's well within his rights to come out and say that. And, you know, at the most basic level, we're entering a January transfer window where we expect there to be movement, whether it's in, whether it's out. We probably think there's going to be a bit of both. And I think it's absolutely fair for a manager to come out and say, look, like, I'm not going to accept that while I'm manager at this football club. And, like, look, do I think it's fundamentally different from what Bonner would have said? Maybe, but even Bonner at times, you could tell he was a bit pissed off at some of the application of some of the players, particularly after the trophy games where, like, the sort of fringe players come in and, like, lose against, like, Colchester or whatever it was. I think he said, like, there's a reason these guys aren't playing, basically, but in maybe a slightly nicer, more polished way. Whereas Harris maybe just had a bit of the Millwall in him, where he was just a bit like, pull your fucking fingers out, lads, that sort of thing, which I don't mind to see, you know, because I think there's a big part of our fan base, and probably, if we're being honest, a big part of Bonner, which should have been telling them that for a long time.
Yeah.
Like, you know.
I think that's it. I think there's a difference in discourse between when it's our first season back in League One and when it's now our third. I think that was the thing that was really grating on some of us by the end, where it's like, there was almost this narrative that, like, we don't deserve to be here. We should just be grateful to be here whenever we lose a game. But actually, like, you know, someone like Neil Harris doesn't strike me as the sort of guy who's just going to accept those standards. Like, he's not going to just let any team of his roll over, which, like you say, I'm not saying that he needs to go and tear into them every time we lose a football match. I'm not saying that it's necessarily the right approach all the time, but it did feel like the right approach this time. And from everything he said in the press, he seemed clearly quite pissed off about the whole situation. It's quite nice as a fan base to sort of have that reflected quite directly in the manager, or at least just a bit of a difference to those last few weeks under Bonner, without rewriting all of the history of Mark Bonner. Let's not get into that, Tom. Let's move on to Saturday. Blackburn away. Let's start with the preview with Dan from the Rovers Chat podcast. Runner News fans, joined by Dan here from the Rovers Chat podcast to help us give us a bit of a preview of Saturday's cup tie. Obviously, two teams that haven't faced off a lot over the years, so this will be an interesting one to find out a bit about how Blackburn's season going. Dan, thanks very much for joining us. How is it all going?
Yeah, thank you for having us on. It's been quite a disappointing season, I'd say. We went through a summer of, after last year, we missed out on the playoffs on the last day. So we went through a summer really where you sat there thinking, if we can add one or two players to the squad, we could be sat there, you know, discussing a playoff push this year. And it started well. You can see a new playing style coming in, which we know comes with its ups and downs. But the last month or so has really dampened everyone's hopes and expectations. It's 6 losses in 7 in December, with one win coming over Bristol City, who were in a transition period as well, so we weren't really facing the Bristol City they are now. So it's been really, you know, really, really dampening month compared to everything else. We've sat there where everyone knows what the Championship's like. You win 3 in a row and suddenly you look like you're going up, and then lose 3 and you're in a relegation battle. And that's what it's kind of felt like, that before December we were sat there going, do you know what, we've tough fixtures, we had trips to Leeds and Southampton, but if we can make a showing of ourselves, we might get there. And strangely, we've lost the easier games on paper. We've lost by more. We got beat at 3-0 at Huddersfield on Boxing Day, who'd won 2 in 16. We got beat to the Hull side that had every key player missing for them that you'd probably want them to miss, and we still lose. And then we drove it on to Rotherham on New Year's Day, and I think Rotherham had picked up 3 points in about 23 games on the road in 2023. So a real dampener of a month that's kind of put us where we expected to be in the table. But when it comes so often, it's very frustrating.
Yeah, it seems like a bit of a sort of not good enough to go up, not bad enough to go down, potentially, right? What exactly is going wrong then? What are you putting it down to? Is it tactics, players, bad recruitment?
It's squad depth, really. So I mentioned the summer, we had this plan in place, signed 3 players. We were going to, go on and sign 4 or 5 more. And then all the budgets changed because our owners are based in India and they can't get money across to us due to legal stuff over there. So we're essentially running to keep the lights on. They're allowed to put money in to keep the lights on, but that's it. They're not allowed to put any money in for transfers. So we're essentially sat there with a squad of, I'd say 15 to 16 senior players at the moment. We've got a few injured, but they're out for another 2 months or so. So we sat there where we're putting kids on the bench that have never played football. We had a 15-year-old on the bench in a game against Bristol City midweek, which kind of sums up the squad depth where we're at the moment, that every game we're putting 2 or 3 players on the bench that have less than 5 appearances at this level. So it's just squad depth. The manager's got his tactics. He's not the issue. But he's, in the supporters' eyes, he's starting to become the issue because although he wants these players that should be doing the job for him, you've got to find a way to win. And unfortunately, he's not doing that. So we're in this situation where we know the problem's bigger than the manager, but the manager's the one you can see every week. He's the one you can vent your frustrations at. So it's, just not going well for him.
I was going to ask, because obviously it's a name that I think a lot of people listening will recognise, John Dahl Thomason. Obviously played at the very highest level. And this looks, from what I see, like his first, maybe, his first job in England, at least as a manager.
Yeah.
It's been at the club since 2022. So is the tide turning on him a little bit? How's his reign gone so far, and what's people's opinions on him?
He's had a really good time. It's really, like I say, it's hard to determine because we've got this squad where, again, Blackburn Rovers is an academy-based club. Every time you watch this club, back from when the Premier League days, when people remember Damien Duff and David Dunn, they were both academy products of Rovers. And we've always had this academy, but we've always had something to back it up in terms of other players on the pitch. The academy's kind of complemented it. Now the academy's come to the forefront. And when you don't have them other players to complement, you're then dipping into the academy again to pick out your 18-year-old. And this has been the issue, that Rovers sit there now in this position where, like I said, the fans, because the owners are away in India, there's only one place to vent the frustrations, and that's when you're in the ground. And unfortunately, that's this young team, and that's the manager that gets the brunt of it, because they're there to to vent your frustrations out. So he's done a good job, and he'll go on and do stuff in his career. He just hasn't got the players he needs, the striker he needs. He's been very critical of the club. It almost feels this situation of, he knows we can't get rid of him for slating the club, but he's kind of pushing his way out without actually resigning because he knows he gets a big paycheck if we do sack him. So we're sat in this situation of, we've got a very good manager, just is it the wrong time for him at this club? It probably is. We probably need a manager of Neil Warnock ilk who will just steady the ship and let these young lads develop. But it's easier said than done. It's harder to get Neil Warnock, and people think, and Rovers have just sat there, can't afford to sack a manager. He'd have to walk. And would you walk away from a big contract? I don't think I would, unless something mega comes up in football.
Yeah, a bit of a game of chicken, it sounds like. Bit of a, not the best situation to be in.
Yeah.
Let's turn the attention to Saturday then. So obviously I mentioned at the start, we're two teams that haven't played each other a lot over the years. We've not really crossed over. I've got it up here in front of me. So we've played each other 15 times in our history. The vast majority of them being between 78 and 83, it looks like, when we were in the old Division 2 together and played each other every season, obviously, in that time. The record isn't good listening for Hughes fans. We've played each other 15 times. Blackburn won 10 of those. We've won 4, and there's been 1 draw. But this is what caught my eye. The last time we played each other was a League Cup match at Ewood Park, 3-2 to Blackburn. And that was played on the 6th of January, which is the exact same date as Saturday's game, 1993. So 31 years to the day since we last faced each other. 3-2 that day to Blackburn. How confident are you of repeating that, or probably doing something a bit more comfortable?
Again, it's a strange one. John Dahl Thomason's very respectful of these competitions. He spoke about how he likes going into it. You know, before we had Tony Mowbray, who just didn't enjoy the cups. I don't think we ever made it past round three in either cup. But John Doe last year, we were 2 minutes away from Wembley in the FA Cup quarterfinals, lost to a screamer. League Cup, we got to the quarterfinals. He's really respectful of these tournaments. So it's tough. It's normally I'd be confident because we'll go into it. And although we'll put a second string team out, it's quite a decent team normally. You know, it's still a team full of players we want to impress. But we're that short on numbers at the moment that we're probably going to dip into. Debutants will probably have probably four or five will make the first start and make the first appearance for the club. And like I say, he's been respectful. We won 8-0 against Harrogate in the League Cup. So we do take it, you know, strongly. If we can go and win, we will try and win. I just feel like at a time when the club needs a win, but with no players, it almost feels like you'd say, pin this game off and go on to the next one. But then do you want to lose a cup game when you're in a really bad run of form? We're going to be seen as the favourites, no matter what squad we put out, because we're technically a league above. So, yeah, I'm confident because he backs himself in the cup and he backs the club in the cup. But we need to focus on the league and we need to focus on keeping players fit, which means anyone who's a slight doubt with injury, like Sammy Smodics, who's been really tired recently, I can't see him featuring. We might go for a young squad and then put the bench full of talent in case we go one down, go two down.
I'd say
I'd rather be playing a prem side and just go out, I'll be honest. But
I'm surprised it's taken this long for Sammy Smodic's name to come up. So, you know, despite everything, it sounds like a little bit of negativity about the club. You've still got the league's top scorer by, I think it's a margin of 3 goals now. He's top scorer in the league. Yeah. So, I mean, first of all, it sounds like he might not play, but what sort of seasons he had, first of all, and how important he's been for you guys? And if you don't think he will play, can you give us a couple of other players you think might feature that we should look out for?
Yeah, very unexpected is what I'd describe his season as. He's just really, Rovers have had a lack of a striker all season, and I think he's kind of benefited from that, the chances of coming to him rather than a front man. And he's found his position, he's found his way in behind the defence. He likes playing against defences that have a high line, he gets in behind them. You'll find a video or you'll send a video on Twitter of 2 goals against Birmingham, exact same goal, played in behind the defence, runs onto it, takes it to the side and chips it over the keeper. And that's him, really. He's, you know, he's not, I won't say he's prolific, even though he's got 16, which sounds a bit bad, but he's had some shocking games and then suddenly scores twice. So, yeah, really unexpected season. I can't see him playing just because he's been out a few recent games and it feels stupid playing him in a game that's not going to matter as much as the league. In terms of ones to watch, though, Semi Atalovic up front, young German striker. We brought him from Borussia Mönchengladbach. Had his first couple of starts recently. He needs a goal, and I think we'll use this game as hopefully, you know, with all respect to Cambridge, maybe a step down in opposition. Can he then get his goal? Because he's looked lively. Jake Garrett in the midfield, really energetic, you know, non-stop midfielder. Probably he's almost like a traditional League One midfielder you'd expect, but he's got maybe a bit more quality. He looks really good, and he looks to be fighting his way in. So I think he'll get a goal. You'll probably see the likes of Dylan Morcande on the wing, former Tottenham winger. We've got a lot of players that are on the cusp this month of, well, if you can't impact the first team, we might as well send you out on loan. And chances are he'll be going to League One, so it's kind of his chance to prove, look, I can go and do it. So, yeah, Morcande, Garrett, Talovic, you'll probably see a bit of... See, we're that limited on players, we might not see any. Zach Gilson had a really good go in the League Cup, scored twice, I believe. Yes, scored against Walsall, scored against Harrogate. He's looked a real talent. He's probably good enough for the Championship. So you'll find a squad full of players keen to impress in front of what will probably be a small crowd. I mentioned before we come on that Cambridge will be near to our attendance today. So, yeah, it's going to be a young side, a side that need encouragement, but aside with a lot of talent. And with all respect to Cambridge, we could turn up and score 4 or 5. It wouldn't chant them, but we could easily turn up. Walsall nearly, you know, did us over in the League Cup. So, yeah, it's hard to predict till start, but I'm expecting Gilson and Talovic, Markande are probably your three to watch. They'll be the attackers that'll try and get us through.
Well, there we go. What's if I had to get a prediction for the game off you, what would you say?
Oh, I'll go for two. No, I'll go for 4-3 Rovers because every cup game we play is, every cup game okay. we play is full of goals because we're shocking at the back when we play in the cup. But we're great. So I know. I think everyone had said that in the ground. It'll be a good game.
You
know, I'm expecting Cambridge to come and be up for it with a big away following. Nothing to lose if you it's one of the games you come into.
Exactly.
And if you go and get beat 5-0, you get beat 5-0. And if you get a cup win, you could go and get one of the big boys. It'll be good. I think it'll be a good game. We like the cup games. We're never boring in the cup.
Brilliant. Oh, that's the best news. There's someone travelling up on the 8 o'clock out of Euston. That's good news. Last question then, for any Hughes fans listening who fancy a little pint before the game, is there a pub nearby that you'd recommend or in the town that you'd recommend away fans head into?
Yeah, if you get into the town centre, the main one everyone goes in is Wetherspoons in town, or if you get to the ground, literally across from the way end, there's a pub called The Furnace. They'll serve away fans. You're pretty much all right around Blackburn for a pint. Yeah. There's not normally any trouble, so...
Yeah, I can't imagine
one on the away end. We're a bit out the town centre, so you're best getting to the ground and then going for a pub.
Brilliant. Thank you so much for your time, Dan.
No, no worries. Thank you for having us on. All the best as well.
Thanks very much, Dan. Not the most positive there from Dan. Tom, general feelings going into this one.
What minute do I decide to go for a pint? That's the question, isn't it? It's a question on everyone's lips.
Preferably you could start on, like, I don't know, minute 5 and then come out about minute 95. That'd be ideal.
Really, it's going to start about 9 o'clock in the morning, isn't it? It's not about 14 hours later. Do you know what? I don't know. I mean, I hate myself for saying it, but it's just a bit of a free hit, isn't it? Really?
Yeah, it really is. It really is.
I would so sorely love to be going into this game with a couple of fit forwards, to be honest. Because it feels like it's a sort of tie where, you know, how often do you see, you know, probably more so in the League Cup, but also in the FA Cup as well, like how often do you see Championship teams just totally phone it in? And like they'll put out like a weakened squad, and how good is a weakened Championship team? You know, probably not great. So in that sense, you'd look at it and go, is this actually sort of winnable? I think if we went into it and, you know, it's all ifs and buts now, of course, but if we had, you know, had my fit, for example, he was obviously on fire, you know, we were playing well, we were creating a lot of chances, you'd be going into this thinking, right, it's a decent away following here, it's a game that doesn't have anything riding on it, we'll go there, give it a good go, and we'll see what happens. Then obviously the alarm clock goes off, you wake up, and it's like, actually, reality is, this is going to be a really, really tough game, and you kind of just want to come out of it in decent shape, no more injuries to key players than what they were before, and hope you can go and give you a good account of yourselves. I think the difference is that maybe 2 or 3 weeks ago I'd have gone into this when the draw was made, I guess I'd have gone into this thinking decent chance here, like, you know, particularly after Harris came in, decent initial impact, let's see what happens, whereas now we're just kind of a bit like, I'm not sure there's too much hope here, but you know, I've been wrong before and I'm sure I'll be wrong again.
I think it's interesting as well, given our injury situation, that like you say, if all things were equal in normal times, we'd probably play a first team because, you know, maybe you pick up an injury, but you've probably got a bit of cover for the league and you probably haven't just come off the back of a result like we just have. Harris said himself after, you know, talk about his post-match comments, he said the cup will be a good laugh, essentially, but like the next game we're really concentrating on is Fleetwood at home, and that's like one of the biggest games in our season. So you can tell where his focus is at. So it's kind of bizarre that we're like, you know, the giant killers in inverted commas. Let's not forget the Premier League winners in the past, in the distant past, granted. But, you know, and we're going to go there potentially with like a rested squad ourselves. I'm really intrigued to see what sort of team he plays. Important to remember, Blackburn are second bottom of the form table in the Championship. It's bizarrely winnable, isn't it, in normal circumstances. But I think it's going to be a really, really weird game. I'm really struggling to call it. But crucially, I don't think any result really, I mean, it is a free hit, isn't it? I can't believe I heard you say free hit, by the way. I'll be holding you to ransom for that next time.
Well, it's worth remembering as well that when we went to Newcastle, we were quite depleted then as well.
Yeah.
Like you look at the bench and I think we've actually got like children on it, basically.
And a back four of Dunk, Ayer, Wakadina and Williams, right?
Yeah. Luke Littler
on the bench.
No, yeah. Obviously he wasn't there. He was not there.
No, he was about 12, wasn't he? Look, what is Harris going to have to do to get goals out of this side? He's already confirmed we're not going to have a striker in by Saturday. So I assume. I mean, is he okay? First question: do you think he'll play on Njoku up top?
Speaking of young prospects,
yeah.
I sort of had that prepared when we were talking about the Latin Orient games, and say something along the lines of, as the country mourns the devastating loss. No, obviously not dead. No. but no, you know, obviously a disappointing evening for one young prodigy could turn into quite an interesting weekend for another. But no, it's not happening. I don't think there's any chance he starts a football match. To be honest.
Okay, so what?
Like he said as much to me in his post match after the Orient game. He's like, look, like he's here because like it would be ridiculous to have a striker out on loan. And literally none of the football club at all, but he's not ready. I mean, look, Jana can't start again. Let's make absolutely no bones about it. I think he's just got to go back to, like, this is something Casper, I think, might have said on the pod after the Oxford game, and it's definitely something he said to me after the game on New Year's Day. But, like, there's surely a part of everyone that's thinking, Rossi's quite tall, isn't he?
For God's sake. No, he said before the Oxford game he thought Ryan Bennett might end up playing up top for us.
Yeah,
that's,
but as you
said, relegation bingo at its finest.
Can't get relegated in the cup, that's the thing. no, look, I think I guess the plan is as much as you possibly can, you go back to what worked well against Oxford, which is obviously a lot easier said than done, but I think you just try and load the forward part of the pitch with as many decent quality footballers as you can and just hope that something can work.
Yeah.
Hopefully he's got a bit more about him than that. Hopefully he's got a bit more in the tank as a manager than just sort of see what happens. I'd like to think we have, or I'd like to think he has. But look, it's tough. Like there's no beating around the bush. Like it's a really difficult one to kind of, you know, judge a manager on. You know, what can he do to get goals out of his team? I don't know. Like fucking pray, like stand on all the double drains you see on the way to the ground. I don't know.
Go for a pint. Go for a pint around the 50th minute.
Ideally, like you just meet like a free agent in the services on the way up there, and you're like, you're about fancy Blackburn today.
What are you doing?
Yeah, unless they just want to pop a sign and on sort of Fridays, obviously this pod comes out Saturday morning, either of those things would be much appreciated. But look, we can sort of speculate on what might happen until the cows come home, but the fact is that until we have an actual recognised striker in whatever mould that comes in, it's going to be very, very difficult for this team to score goals. And you look at even Oxford, like, we managed to put out a team and create loads of chances, but if there's no one to get on the end of them, no one to actually stick the ball in the net, then you're struggling regardless, right? But all you can hope is we give it a decent account and set pieces. That's it. Sorry, I should have said
there
that.
We go, right.
Try and win a few free kicks in around the box. Try and win a couple of free kicks in around the box. Get the centre halves up and see what happens.
I wonder if, I mean, look, genuinely, what sort of team do you think he plays? Do you think he just goes full strength? Like, does he risk like players like Cousins and Thomas, I suppose, probably doesn't even feature, even if he's probably good enough to go. He said that was a precaution. I don't know, Liam Bennett, do you know what I mean? Is there a couple of these players that he gives a bit of a rest to? Oh, it's mad talking about it going, playing a championship team. But he's talked himself how important that Fleetwood game is. That's very evident. So do you think there's a couple of players that he rests?
I really hope he doesn't play Jordan Cousins, because I tell you one thing now, I cannot be fucking arsed with the train journey home with you if Cousins plays and comes off injured 3.5 hours back from Blackburn. What are we doing risking senior key players in the team? I have a feeling Mannion might start in goal, to be honest. It feels like a very big time thing to do, to be dropping goalkeepers for cup games, but what's the point in having a decent sub goalkeeper there if they're not going to play in a game like this, frankly? So that might be one. But then, like, I actually agree with the sentiment that, like, at the moment you would like to play other players. We don't really have many.
Yes, I think.
And even, like, you look at, like, the proper depth of the squad now, like, your Simpers, your McConnells, even your Brandon Houndstrups, like,
all out.
They're injured as well. So, like, all of them. So what do you do? Like, it's going to be kind of as you were. And the discussion is, I guess, does Kaiko start or does Jana? Or does someone else start up top. That's pretty much it, I think.
They're so actually yeah,
who's available.
You're right. If we're assuming that Gordon's sort of, let's say, frozen out, they're actually...
Gordon will probably have to play at some point. Like, he'll have to play a part. Because he's going to have to be on the bench. Like, again, like, you know, with, you know, his, obviously his character fundamentally has been questioned by Harris, and obviously his performances haven't been great of late. But, like, again, like, it looks mental to be paying a, you know, paying a wage for a striker to him not to even feature when we're having conversations like this. So, yeah, we'll have to see. I think in an ideal world, Harris would make changes, but I'm not sure he's got the capacity to do so.
Oh, this is mental. It's got Njoku last minute equaliser written all over it, and then a replay at the Abbey that no one, and I mean no one, is interested in. No one. I honestly reckon we'd throw the game. Anyway, all right, last thing. Blackburn, it's going to be a great day out regardless. We're all going to have a good time. Before we end...
That's an interesting sentence. That's a sentence that only applies to very, very specific situations, Anna.
I had that brilliant thing when I booked my train ticket the other day where it goes, you know, when the train line, like...
You're going to Blackburn.
Yeah, congratulations, you're going to Blackburn. Fuck off. All right, look, let's talk about the January window quickly just to wrap up. A lot of chat, obviously, on various outlets, message board, X, about the January window so far. All right. How stressed are you about the fact that we're currently recording on the 4th of January and there's been a lack of activity? Do you think it's, you know, everyone needs to maybe relax a touch because it is the 4th of January? Or validly, I think maybe in this situation, do you think it's frustrating that we didn't have this problem ready to be fixed from minute one of the transfer window?
If we're sat here previewing the Fleetwood game and there's nobody in, I'll be panicking because that's when shit starts to get a bit real. Look, I don't know if people were expecting that there would be a striker in the door by this point of January. I don't know if that's the expectations of the entire fan base is one, or if it's just what some people are sort of hoping for. Obviously, we all would have liked there to have been two strikers gift wrapped for us on the first day of the window. But if you look at the business across the Football League, there's not been much that's happened. Like, transfers don't happen that early. I think Carlisle were the only ones that had a transfer done and announced and sealed before the window had opened, which was them signing Luke Armstrong from Harrogate, who nearly went to Wrexham in the summer and has basically been frozen out of Harrogate. I might have missed a couple. Other than that, like, we're talking like odds and sods, like, you know, the odd loan signing here and there. Look, it was unlikely we were going to have someone in for the Blackburn game, and obviously the shame of it is that I had basically got injured, which means we've literally got nobody. So it looks worse than what it probably actually is, I think. But, you know, like I say, you fast forward a week, then that opinion very much changes. Because, you know, this issue of the sort of forward part of the pitch is not a new one. And we were sat here this time last year having exactly the same conversation about the central midfield part of the pitch. I think it took us a good 2 or 3 weeks to bring. I think it was McGrandles was the first one through the door. The only one through the door, in fact, I think, in that part of the pitch. And that took a lot of time, right? Obviously, it went well when it did, and there was a big part in what turned out to be a good end to the season. So, you know, it's not easy January. And I think the difficulty is sometimes, like, you are relying on a bit of a chain of things to happen.
He mentioned himself, sorry, on Boxing Day, he said himself that the target that they had lined up or almost ready to go scored for his parent club on Boxing Day. I think someone posted that on the message board. So
yeah,
we can try and figure out who that is.
I would kind of like, look, the most difficult thing to do in January is to go out and sign a centre forward is going to change your season because that's for every single football club. Like, regardless of you know, where we're at, I genuinely think even if we had sort of four or five strikers on the books, all fit, all doing sort of reasonably okay, we would still be talking about, can we do with another centre forward? That's just sort of how it works, isn't it? And unfortunately, it's the most difficult thing to do because signing good goal scorers is not easy. That's why they're always really expensive. That's what's harder for us, probably more so than a lot of other football clubs, to sign them. But I can also understand the sentiment and the you know, the sort of frustration that we've probably known that we're going to go into January needing a centre forward since about October. Probably conservatively October, maybe even a bit earlier than that. And what you expect as a football fan is that whoever it is that's responsible, whether it's the manager that was in place at the time or is in place now, whether it's someone like Ben Strang or whether it's, you know, the sort of recruitment team that work underneath him, will have a list of targets and they will go through that list and they will go, is he available? Is he available? Is he available? And they'll come and they'll get someone who's ready to come in, you know, sort of near the start of January and is good to go. You know, I can tell you for a fact from my own day to day, recruiting people isn't that straightforward. Like, things change, situations change, circumstances change. You can't in October say, yeah, we want this guy, and then it just works out in the, you know, sort of first day of January. I can really understand why people would think that, and I can really understand why frustration as the days tick on, and as you know, you hear, oh, well, hopefully we'll get someone this week, and hopefully we'll get someone next week, when you're like, just fucking sign someone now. Like, you know, there must be a kid out there in like the Man City Academy who can come in and score a goal. There must be. And at this point, we're probably not even asking for someone to come and score a goal. We're simply asking them to come and play.
Put a body up there. I think I do sympathise with the frustration that it's sort of in all the situations, like almost regardless of the injuries. You're looking at Gassan, who's always been quite a streaky striker anyway. Kachunga, who hasn't ever really played as an out-and-out striker a lot.
Kachunga should be back by the Fleetwood game as well, which should be big. Because right. Like, even against Exeter, when he was playing that sort of 9.5 position.
He's been brilliant. He's been the best player under Harris.
He played really well and has also scored goals.
Yeah.
So, you know, there's reason maybe that even if it's not by the Fleetwood game, it might not be absolutely catastrophic. But
But I think, look, in general, like, you know, for the people who are getting a bit touchy about it, I do actually completely sympathise. Normally, I'm very, like, cynical of people getting, you know, like in the summer when people get angry and touchy about signings not being made and, you know, by the first game of the season or whatever it is. But I think the situation in January is completely different. But I do sympathise more than ever because it's been obvious enough, right? Like you say, Kachunga has never really played as an out-and-out striker. Hadmi's been streaky for Jiri. We can never have relied on him to play 46 games a season anyway. So you're sort of going into the season with, like, I don't know, 1.5 strikers. It's maybe something we never highlighted enough, but we knew that Mark Bonner likes to build his squad that way. So you can't put all the blame on the recruitment team when obviously the manager and the head coach is still going to have a huge opinion in that. And then flipping that later on, that, like, if you then suddenly bring a manager in at the start of December, maybe the targets that they had lined up or that they wanted, he just didn't want anymore. So it wasn't a Neil Harris sort of player. So it's impossible to know. And it's a lot of speculation, but I think I'm not that bothered about not going into Blackburn without a striker myself, just because of everything we just spoke about with this game. But the Fleetwood game is massive for us, and that run following it as well. And we sort of heaped the pressure on it, considering that performance we put in against Orient. That's the situation we're in. We'll talk more about January in the upcoming pods. We've got back to regular programming for UTAS from now on. So there's pod Sundays and released Mondays and Thursdays for every week in January. Aren't you lucky? Tom, it's been a pleasure. Let's get Islands in the Stream back up and running if we get a result at Blackburn.
Already excited. I mean, I don't want to sound too pessimistic, but it's not going to happen, so it doesn't matter. So yeah, there's your optimism, and you know, hopefully we'll be sat here Sunday evening talking about yet another goal that I've missed.
Yeah, exactly. Brandon and Njoku's 88th minute winner that Tom decided to sneak out for a cheeky beer for.